be influenced by his own remarkable physical attributes. Walking, riding, swimming, and fencing were the maestro's preferred forms of regular exercise. In his anatomical notebooks, he reasoned that arteriosclerosis causes accelerated aging and is the result of lack of exercise. A vegetarian and accomplished chef, Da Vinci believed that a thoughtful diet was a key to health and well-being. Da Vinci also cultivated the balanced use of both sides of his body, painting, drawing, and writing with both hands. He was psychophysically ambidextrous. Da Vinci believed that we should accept personal responsibility for our health and well-being. He recognized the effect of attitudes and emotions on physiology, anticipating the discipline of psychoneuroimmunology, and counseled independence from doctors and medicines. His philosophy of medicine was holistic. He viewed sickness as the discord of the elements infused into the living body and viewed healing as the restoration of discordant elements. Leonardo urged, "Learn to preserve your health," and offered the following specific advice on maintaining well-being. To keep in health, these rules are wise. Beware of anger and avoid grievous moods. Rest your head and keep your mind cheerful. Be covered well at night. Exercise moderately. Shun wantonness and pay attention to diet. Eat only when you want and sup light. Keep upright when you rise from the dining table. Do not be with the belly upwards or the head lowered. Let your wine be mixed with water. Take a little at a time, not between meals, and not on an empty stomach. Eat simple, i.e., vegetarian food. Chew well. Go to the toilet regularly. The Da Vinci Diet. Combined with aerobic conditioning, strength training, and flexibility exercises, a healthy diet will help you live a longer, happier, more balanced life. Although diet fads come and go, there are some fundamental truths of intelligent eating that withstand the tests of time and scientific scrutiny. Seek food that is fresh, natural, and wholesome. Leonardo didn't have to be concerned about avoiding overly processed, additive-injected junk foods, but we do. Eat plenty of fiber. Raw and lightly cooked vegetables, grains, beans, and other fiber-rich foods were the mainstay of Leonardo's diet. These foods brush and exercise your digestive tract, keeping it active and healthy. Avoid overeating. Leonardo counseled, sup light. Learn to stop eating just before you are full. You will feel better and probably live longer. Numerous experiments by Drs. McKay, Massaro, and others have shown that rats who are slightly underfed live twice as long as those who gorge themselves. Get enough water. Every traditional Italian table is set with numerous bottles of pure mineral water. Your body is 80% water, and it needs a regular resupply to flush away toxins and rebuild cells. So make water-rich foods, vegetables, and fresh fruits an integral part of your daily dining. When thirsty, drink pure distilled or spring water or fresh fruit vegetable juices. Avoid swilling, colas, and other so-called soft drinks. They are filled with additives and empty calories. Minimize your intake of additional salt and sugar. A balanced diet will give you plenty of natural salts and sugars. Too much salt can contribute to hypertension and other maladies. Excess sugar distorts your metabolism and loads you up with useless calories. Avoid being seduced by the short-term energy stage that seems to come from a sugary snack. If you pay attention, you'll notice that it is usually followed shortly by a depression of vitality. Aim to wean yourself from sprinkling salt or spooning sugar onto your foods. At the very least, taste your food before adding either. Moderate your intake of fats and minimize saturated fats. Use cold-pressed, healthy oils like olive, Leonardo's favorite, canola, and flaxseed, and avoid margarine altogether. Eat only free-range meats in moderation. The maestro was a vegetarian. His favorite everyday dish was minestrone soup composed of vegetables, beans, and rice or pasta. Nevertheless, if you do eat meat, enjoy one serving per day as a recommended maximum. Avoid eating animals that have been fed growth hormones, antibiotics, and other toxins. Vary your diet. A varied diet is more likely to be balanced and enjoyable. Enjoy a little wine with dinner. Leonardo recommended enjoying wine with food in moderation, but he decried overuse and drunkenness. Actuarial statistics demonstrate that moderate alcohol consumption, defined as up to 2 glasses of wine or 2 beers per day, seems to prolong average lifespan for 2 years. There is also significant evidence that moderate daily enjoyment of red wine with food improves circulation and can help prevent heart disease. Of course, as the maestro knew, drinking beyond moderation has the opposite effects, shortening lifespan and pickling the nervous system. Don't eat, dine. Grabbing a bite while eating on the run usually leads to poor dietary choices and much subsequent indigestion. Instead, discipline yourself to sit down and enjoy every meal. Create, as the maestro did, an aesthetically pleasing environment, a nice place setting, flowers on the table, an artful presentation of even the simplest foods. A pleasant atmosphere and an unhurried pace improve your digestion, your equanimity, and the quality of your life. Most important, listen to your body before every meal and determine what you actually want to eat. As Leonardo emphasized, eating contrary to the inclination is injurious to the health. If in doubt, imagine how you will feel after you eat the food in question. Then pause for a few moments before eating and bring your awareness to the present moment. Savor the smell, taste, and texture of every bite. Make every meal an experience of sensazione. Corporalità and you. What is your personal approach to cultivating fitness and developing mind-body coordination? What is your image of your own body? How much are you influenced by external factors, such as magazine articles, the fashion industry, images on television, other people's opinions, in determining your own body image? Whatever your God-given strengths or weaknesses, you can dramatically improve the quality of your life through a comprehensive approach to corporalità. Begin by considering the self-assessment which follows. Corporalità, self-assessment. I am aerobically fit. I am getting stronger. My flexibility is improving. I know when my body is tense or relaxed. I am knowledgeable about diet and nutrition. Friends would describe me as graceful. I am becoming more ambidextrous. I am aware of the ways in which my physical state affects my attitudes. I am aware of the ways in which my attitudes affect my physical state. I have a good understanding of practical anatomy. I am well coordinated. I love to move. Da Vinci was highly critical of the physicians of his day. He wrote, "Every man wishes to make money to give to the doctors, destroyers of life. They therefore ought to be rich." And he counseled, "Shun physicians because their drugs are a kind of alchemy. He who takes medicines is ill-advised." Corporalità, application and exercises. Develop a fitness program. Da Vinci's life was an expression of the ancient classical ideal of mens sana in corpore sano, a sound mind in a sound body. Modern scientific studies confirm many of Da Vinci's recommendations, practices, and intuitions. Although it is a bit difficult to picture the maestro in a modern aerobics class, a personal fitness program is nonetheless a cornerstone of physical health, mental acuity, and emotional well-being. To actualize your potential as a Renaissance man or woman, maintain a balanced fitness program that develops aerobic capacity, strength, and flexibility. Aerobic conditioning. Leonardo guessed that arteriosclerosis was a cause of premature aging, and that it could be prevented by regular exercise. Dr. Kenneth Cooper and many other modern scientists have confirmed the maestro's intuition. Cooper, the originator of the concept of aerobics, found that regular moderate exercise has profoundly beneficial effects for the body and mind. Aerobic, with oxygen, exercise strengthens your cardiovascular system, improving blood and therefore oxygen flow to your body and brain. Your brain is on average less than 3% of your body's weight, yet it uses more than 30% of your body's oxygen. As you become aerobically fit, you double your capacity to process oxygen. A regular program of aerobic exercise leads to significant improvements in alertness, emotional stability, mental acuity, and stamina. For an individual who is out of shape, it generally takes 6 weeks of exercise for at least 20 minutes, 4 times a week, to yield marked benefits. Consult your physician for guidance on beginning your own program. The secret of a successful aerobic training program is to find activities that you enjoy. Brisk walking, running, dancing, swimming, rowing, or martial arts training can be combined to create your ideal program. Strength training. Leonardo's legendary ability to bend horseshoes with his bare hands and stop runaway horses in their tracks is probably outside the grasp of even the most ambitious denizen of the weight room. Nevertheless, moderate strength training is a valuable part of a balanced approach to fitness. Weight training tones and strengthens muscles and promotes the resilience of connective tissue and bone. Recent research suggests that strength training helps prevent muscle wasting and osteoporosis in the elderly. And it is also the most efficient way to burn excess body fat. To begin your own strength training program, find a good coach or trainer and seek guidance on developing and maintaining proper form. Flexibility exercises. Vasari tells us that Leonardo's remarkable strength was joined to dexterity. You can increase your dexterity with regular flexibility training. Practice simple stretching exercises before and after aerobic and strength workouts and upon arising. Proper stretching prevents injury and benefits your circulatory and immune systems. The secret to a good stretch is to take your time, bring your full awareness to the process, and allow easy release of muscle groups in harmony with extended exhalations. Never bounce or try to force a stretch. You can learn how to get the most from your stretches in a dance or martial arts class, or ideally, by studying yoga. Compensatory maladjustments. If you have ever seen a jogger lumbering painfully down the street or witnessed the contortions of someone trying to lift weights that are too heavy, then you are familiar with what the philosopher John Dewey called compensatory maladjustments. In other words, exercise without body awareness and poise can sometimes do more harm than good. Develop body awareness by studying practical anatomy. A healthy diet and aerobic, strength, and flexibility training are key elements in achieving and maintaining well-being. But your fitness regimen is incomplete without a constructive approach to body awareness, poise, and ambidexterity. These elements form the missing link in many fitness programs. In the path of self-development, people commonly contemplate the classic question, "Who am I?" You can make significant progress in self-realization by asking an even more basic question, "Where am I?" Body image and body awareness play a tremendous role in determining self-image and self-awareness. In the Sensazioni chapter, you are introduced to a program of exercises for sharpening the 5 senses, sight, hearing, smell, taste, and touch. Cultivation of body awareness begins with honing the 6th sense, kinesthesia. The kinesthetic sense is your sense of weight, position, and movement. It tells you whether you are relaxed or tense, awkward or graceful. You can begin to sharpen your kinesthetic sense and increase your self-awareness by experimenting with the following exercises. Mirror observation. Stand in front of a full-length mirror. If you are courageous, do this naked. Avoid judging or evaluating your appearance. Just observe your reflection objectively. Does your head tend to tilt to one side or the other? Is one shoulder higher than the other? Does your pelvis rock forward or is it held back? Is your weight distributed evenly on your feet? Or do you depend on one leg more than the other for support? What parts of your body appear to be overly tense? Are your pelvis, torso, and head in a balanced alignment? Record your observations in your notebook. Make a drawing of your own body. In your notebook, make a sketch of your whole body. Don't worry about creating a masterpiece. Just do a simple 5-minute rendering. Even a modified stick figure will be fine. After you've sketched your whole body, color in red the places where you feel the most tension and stress. Then, with a black marker, delineate the points in your body where your energy seems blocked, the parts where you feel the least. Next, use a green color to indicate the areas of your body that feel most alive, where the energy flows most freely. Most people have significant areas of red and black. Much of our unnecessary tension and stress is a result of ignorance and misinformation regarding our own natural structure and function. Inaccurate body maps result in misuse, exacerbating stress and dulling awareness. Explore your body map. Return to the mirror and with the index finger of either hand, point to the place where your head balances on your neck, your shoulder joints, your hip joints. Now, look at Leonardo's illustration of the human body to begin clarifying your body map. Head balance. The head is poised at the very top of the spine, at the atlanto-occipital joint. Most people locate the balance point of the head too low because they have an unconscious habit of shortening their neck muscles every time they move. Shoulder joints. Most people locate the shoulder joint at the point where the upper arm attaches to the torso. They miss the connection of the collarbone and sternum, remaining unaware of the true mobility of this complex of joints. This inaccurate body mapping is associated with a tendency to freeze the entire shoulder girdle, causing significant discomfort. Hip joints. Just as the shoulder joint must be differentiated from the shoulders, so the hip joints must be differentiated from the hips. Watch a toddler bend to pick up a toy, and you'll see the natural use of the hip joint. Then observe the average adult bending to pick something up, and you will see that he or she probably bends at the waist. Bending from the waist, rather than the hip joints, is a significant cause of lower back pain. Know your spine. Refine your body map a bit further by exploring your assumptions about your spine. How wide do you think your spine is? Draw your estimate of the spine's width in your notebook. Now, think about the natural shape of the spine. In your notebook, sketch the shape of a healthy spine. Be sure to complete both sketches before reading any further. Your spine is wider than you may imagine. Heavy thoughts. How much does your head weigh? Jot down your best guess. Next time you are in the gym, pick up a 15-pound barbell. Or when you visit the supermarket, hoist a 15-pound bag of potatoes. That is how much the average head weighs. This 15-pound globe contains your brain, eyes, ears, nose, mouth, and balance mechanism. What happens to your whole body if this globe is out of balance? What happens to your awareness and sensory acuity if your head is not properly aligned at the top of your spine? Did you know that 60% of your receptors for kinesthetic awareness are located in the neck? What happens to body awareness if the neck muscles are held in contraction to support a poorly balanced head? Clearly, for the aspiring Renaissance man or woman, head balance is a top priority. You can deepen your appreciation for this question of balance with the following exercise. Experience the evolution of the upright posture. This exercise was inspired by the work of the great anatomist and anthropologist, Professor Raymond Dart, whom I was privileged to interview on a number of occasions. I have led this exercise for many groups over the years, including company presidents, martial artists, psychologists, school teachers, and police officers. Although it is particularly fun to do this exercise in a group, you can still get the value by doing it on your own. All you need is some clean carpeted floor space and a towel. Begin by lying face down on the floor with your feet together and your hands resting at your sides. Put the towel under your face. Notice that it is now impossible to fall. Rest face down for a minute or two and contemplate the consciousness of a creature with this kind of relationship to gravity. Experiment with slithering along the floor toward an imaginary morsel of food. Now get ready for an evolutionary leap. You are about to mutate. Slide the back of your hands along the floor beside you until they flip over so that your palms are now on the floor in front of you. Press down with your newly evolved paws to raise your head and upper torso off the ground. Look around and consider the leap in consciousness allowed by your expanded horizon. Experiment with using your paws to help you explore your environment and move toward food. Next, evolve to become a mammalian quadruped. Choose your favorite: horse, dog, cougar, gazelle, water buffalo. Move up onto all fours, and just for fun, imitate the gait, sounds, and other behaviors of your chosen animal. How does your range of behavior and potential awareness change in this position? Your next huge evolutionary leap is to rise off your front paws and become a primate. Choose your favorite: chimpanzee, orangutan, gorilla, and enjoy moving around in monkey mode. How do the possibilities for awareness change? Does the changing relationship with gravity affect your options for communication and socialization? Now, rise up to your full stature as Homo sapiens. What vulnerabilities are inherent in a bipedal, fully upright alignment? What are the implications of your upright posture for the development of intelligence and consciousness? On a day-to-day basis, do you observe a relationship between people's posture and poise and their level of awareness and alertness? Professor Dart, along with most of his colleagues, realized that our potential for consciousness and intelligence is intimately linked to the evolution of our fully upright stature. Yet the pressures of our lives, sitting in chairs, working at the computer, driving through rush hour, lead us to lose touch with this aspect of our birthright. For most of us, poise must be relearned. Relearn poise. Study the Alexander technique. Leonardo was renowned for his effortless upright poise and grace. The citizens of Florence turned out in numbers just to watch him walk down the street. Vasari enthuses about the maestro's more than infinite grace in every action. It is almost impossible to imagine Leonardo da Vinci slumping and slouching around. You can cultivate the Da Vincian qualities of poise, balance, and grace by studying the technique developed by another genius, F. Matthias Alexander. Born in Tasmania in 1869, Alexander was a Shakespearean actor specializing in one-man shows of tragedy and comedy. His promising career was interrupted by a tendency to lose his voice in the middle of performances. Alexander consulted the leading doctors, speech therapists, and drama coaches of his day, carefully following their advice. Nothing helped. The average person would have given up and tried another line of work. But like Leonardo, Alexander believed in experience over authority. He resolved to overcome his problem on his own, reasoning that something he was doing with and to himself was causing the problem. But how could he discover the specific cause? Alexander realized that he must find a way to get objective feedback. He began to observe himself in specially constructed mirrors. After many months of detailed and thorough observation, he noticed a pattern that emerged whenever he attempted to recite. 1. He contracted his neck muscles, thereby pulling back his head. 2. He depressed his larynx. And 3, he gasped for breath. As he observed further, Alexander noted that this tension pattern was associated with a tendency to 4, push out his chest, 5, hollow his back, and 6, contract all the major joint surfaces of his body. Alexander's continued observation confirmed that this pattern was present in varying degrees every time he spoke. Noticing that this pattern of misuse began to manifest the moment he thought of reciting, Alexander realized that he had to unlearn this pattern, re-educating his mind and body as a whole system in order to change. He discovered that the key to doing this was to pause prior to action, inhibiting his habitual pattern of contraction, and then focus on specific directions he evolved to facilitate a lengthening and expansion of his stature. Alexander described these directions as follows. Let the neck be free, to allow the head to go forward and up. To let the back lengthen and widen. Creating an Australian version of a Zen koan, Alexander emphasized that these directions were to be projected all together, one after the other. Repeated practice of this new method produced astounding results. Alexander not only regained full control of his voice, he also recovered from a number of persistent health problems and became famous on the stage for the quality of his voice, breathing, and stage presence. People began to flock to Alexander for lessons, among them a group of physicians who had an amateur theatrical company. The doctors began to send their patients with chronic problems to Alexander, people with stress ailments, breathing problems, back and neck pain. Alexander was able to assist these people in a surprising number of instances by helping them to eliminate the habits of inappropriate effort responsible for their maladies. The doctors were so impressed by Alexander's work that in 1904 they sponsored his setting sail for London to share his work with the world scientific community. He arrived in London and soon became known as the protector of the London Theater, giving lessons to top actresses and actors of the day. Alexander's work also had a profound influence on a variety of writers and scientists. Before Alexander died in 1955, he trained a number of individuals to continue his work. For many years, the Alexander technique has been taught at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts, the Royal Academy of Music, the Juilliard School, and other top academies for musicians, actors, and dancers. Indeed, the technique has become a trade secret for people in the performing arts. The Alexander technique is also practiced by professional and Olympic athletes, the Israeli Air Force, corporate executives, and individuals in all walks of life. Alexander and Sapervedere. Knowing how to see was a crucial aspect of Alexander's genius. His discovery was predicated on painstaking, detailed, amazingly acute observation. But when his sponsors collected funds to send him to England in 1904, they were short of the amount needed by a few hundred pounds. How could Alexander raise this considerable sum? Like Leonardo, Alexander had a passion for horses. Relying on his study of the practical anatomy of the horse, Alexander went to the racetrack, bet a tidy sum on a handsome long shot, and won. The Alexander work begins with a keen level of self-observation. Working in your notebook, keep a diary of the appropriateness of your effort in everyday activities. Watch for inappropriate effort in activities such as sitting, bending, lifting, walking, driving, eating, and talking. Are you stiffening your neck and pulling your head back? Raising your shoulders? Narrowing your back? Bracing your knees? Or holding your breath in order to pick up your toothbrush? Work at the computer? Talk on the telephone? Pick up a pen to write? Meet someone new? Speak in public? Hit a tennis, golf, or racquetball? Tie your shoes? Turn your steering wheel? Bend down to pick something up? Take a bite of food? It is very difficult to observe and change these everyday habits without external feedback. Using a mirror or video can be quite helpful, but the best way to accelerate your progress is to take private lessons with a qualified teacher of the Alexander technique. Alexander teachers are trained to use their hands in an extraordinarily subtle and delicate way to guide you to free your neck, rediscover your natural alignment, and awaken your kinesthetic perspicacity. In the meantime, you can use the following procedure, inspired by Alexander's work, to begin cultivating everyday poise and balance. Foster the balanced resting state. All you need to benefit from this procedure is a relatively quiet place, some carpeted floor space, a few paperback books, and 10 to 20 minutes. Begin by placing the books on the floor. Stand approximately your body's length away from the books with your feet shoulder-width apart. Let your hands rest gently at your sides. Facing away from the books, look straight ahead with a soft, alert focus. Pause for a few moments. Think of allowing your neck to be free so that your head can go forward and up and your whole torso can lengthen and widen. Breathing freely, become aware of the contact of your feet on the floor and notice the distance from your feet to the top of your head. Keep your eyes open and alive and listen to the sounds around you. Maintaining this awareness, move lightly and quickly so that you are resting on one knee. Then, sit on the floor so that you are supporting yourself with your hands behind you, feet flat on the floor, and knees bent. Continue breathing easily. Let your head drop forward a tiny bit to ensure that you are not tightening your neck muscles and pulling your head back. Then, gently roll your spine along the floor so that your head rests on the books. The books should be positioned so that they support your head at the place where your neck ends and your head begins. If your head is not well positioned, reach back with one hand and support your head while using the other hand to place the books in the proper position. Add or take away books until you find a height that encourages a gentle lengthening of your neck muscles. Your feet remain flat on the floor, with your knees pointing up to the ceiling and your hands resting on the floor or loosely folded on your chest. Allow the weight of your body to be fully supported by the floor. To reap the benefit of this procedure, rest in this position for 10 to 20 minutes. As you rest, gravity will be lengthening your spine and realigning your torso. Keep your eyes open to avoid dozing off. You may wish to bring your attention to the flow of your breathing and to the gentle pulsation of your whole body. Be aware of the floor supporting your back, allowing your shoulders to rest as your back widens. Let your neck be free as your whole body lengthens and expands. After you have rested for 10 to 20 minutes, get up slowly, being careful to avoid stiffening or shortening your body as you return to a standing position. To achieve a smooth transition, decide when you are going to move and then gently roll over onto your front, maintaining your new sense of integration and expansion. Ease your way into a crawling position and then back onto one knee. With your head leading the movement upward, stand up. Pause for a few moments. Listen, eyes alive. Again, feel your feet on the floor and notice the distance between your feet and the top of your head. You may be surprised to discover that the distance has expanded. As you move into the activities of your day, imagine moving with the grace of a figure painted by the maestro. For best results, practice the balanced resting state twice a day. You can do it when you wake up in the morning, when you come home from work, or before retiring at night. The procedure is especially valuable when you feel overworked or stressed, and before or after exercise. Regular practice will help you develop an upright, easy poise that encourages balance and grace in everything you do. The visible expression of grace. Movement, to be perpetuated in art, must be of a special kind. It must be the visible expression of grace. Although Renaissance writers left no formal definition of that word, they would all have agreed that it implied a series of smooth transitions. It was to be found, perfectly exemplified, in flowing gestures, floating draperies, curling or rippling hair. An abrupt transition was brutal. The graceful was continuous. Leonardo inherited this tradition of movement and grace in the parts and extended it to the whole. Kenneth Clark's comments on grace in art reflect the qualities cultivated by the Alexander technique in daily life. Grace, continuity, and wholeness, embodying smooth transitions in everyday movements, such as sitting to standing or standing into walking. Cultivate ambidexterity. When Michelangelo was working on the Sistine Chapel, he astounded observers by switching his paintbrush from one hand to the other as he worked. Leonardo, a natural left-hander, cultivated this same ambidexterity and regularly switched hands when working on the Last Supper and other masterpieces. When I interviewed Professor Raymond Dart and asked him for his recommendations on the development of human potential, he responded, "Balance the body, balance the brain. The future lies with the ambidextrous human." Dart emphasized that the right hemisphere of the cerebral cortex controls the left side of the body, and the left hemisphere controls the right side of the body. He suggested that coordinating the two sides of the body would promote the coherence and balance of the two hemispheres. Begin your investigation of ambidexterity by exploring the power of your non-dominant hand. Try the following exercises. Reverse crossing. Practice interlocking your fingers and crossing your arms and legs in reverse of your normal pattern. See if you can wink your non-dominant eye and roll your tongue over to both sides. Use your non-dominant hand. Try using your non-dominant hand for a day or part of a day to start. Turn on the lights, brush your teeth, eat your breakfast with your other hand, record your feelings and observations in your journal. Experiment with writing. Try signing your name with the other hand. Write out the alphabet. Then do some stream of consciousness writing on a topic of your choice. You may discover that writing with your non-dominant hand will offer you a different way of thinking about things, a way that helps you access your intuition. Experiment with writing and drawing with both hands simultaneously. After you have a little practice writing with your non-dominant hand, experiment with writing and drawing with both hands at once. If possible, try this on a chalkboard. Draw circles, triangles, and squares. Then sign your name with both hands at the same time. Experiment with mirror writing. You will be surprised how easy it is to learn. All it takes is a little practice. Take a cross-lateral refresher to refresh your attention when learning, working, or struggling with a creative challenge. Reach behind your back and touch your right foot with your left hand, and then your left foot with your right hand. Do this 10 times. Or raise your left knee to touch your right hand, and then your right knee to touch your left hand. Do this 10 times. Learn to juggle. Learning to juggle is a marvelous way to develop ambidexterity, balance, and mind-body coordination. Da Vinci biographer Antonino Valentin confirms that the maestro was a juggler. The art was part of the pageants and parties that he designed for his patrons and went hand in hand with his love of conjuring. Moreover, the basic juggling pattern that you will learn is a fantasia da Vinci, a knot or infinity symbol. Get 3 balls, tennis balls are fine, and try the following. 1. Take 1 ball and toss it back and forth, from hand to hand, in a gentle arc just above your head. 2. Take 2 balls, one in each hand, toss the ball in your right hand just as you did with 1 ball. When it reaches its high point, toss the ball in your left hand in exactly the same manner. Focus on smooth, easy throws and let both balls drop. 3. Same as step 2, only this time catch the first toss, let the second one drop. 4. Same as step 2, only this time catch them both. 5. Now you are ready to try 3 balls. Take 2 balls in one hand and 1 in the other. Toss the front ball in the hand that has 2. When it reaches its high point, throw the single ball in your other hand. When it reaches its high point, throw the remaining ball. Let them all drop. 6. Same as step 5, only this time catch the first toss. 7. Same as step 5, only this time catch the first 2 tosses. If you catch the first 2 balls and remember to throw the 3rd, you will notice that there is only 1 ball remaining in the air, and you can already do 1 ball. Catch the 3rd ball, and you will experience your first juggle. Celebrate. Of course, once you achieve your first juggle, you will no doubt wish to experience multiple juggles. As you continue to practice, focus on the ease and direction of your throws, and relax when the balls drop. If you keep your attention primarily on throwing and continue to breathe easily, your success will be inevitable. Corporalità for parents. Put your hand on a baby's back and sense the wholeness, flexibility, and vibrant aliveness under your fingertips. Little children are naturally poised. They move with amazing grace and coordination. What happens to this poise as they get older? Well, most kids are fine through first grade. Look back at your own first grade photo, and you will see that most of the children are beautifully upright. But look at the postures of third and fourth graders. You'll witness the beginnings of slumps, contortions, and tensions of all kinds. And for many kids, the teenage years are a permanent mega slump. Now, go to a mall or church or any place you can observe families. Watch parents and children walking together, and you will see striking similarities in their habits and quirks of posture and movement. Although we can't protect our kids from all of life's slump-inducing burdens and contortion-inspiring tensions, we can aim to provide a positive model of poise by embodying it ourselves. Corporalità at work. The state of your body influences your mind. If your body is stiff and rigid, or collapsed and limp, your mind will often follow suit. Our language is full of phrases that demonstrate an understanding of this relationship, such as, "She won't change her position on this issue." "They've taken an aggressive stance on this point." And, from the Bible, "They stiffened their necks so they would not hear the word of the Lord." The word corporation comes from the root corpus, meaning body. Most corporate bodies are overly stiff and dominated by unconscious habit. In many meetings and brainstorming sessions, for example, people sit around for hours in more or less the same position, trying to generate new ideas and solve problems. And then they wonder, why are we stuck? Many organizations are introducing brief sitting massage sessions, yoga, and Aikido classes to help their people discover greater physical and mental flexibility. In addition to these disciplines, you can try the following exercise to enliven your next planning meeting or brainstorming session. If you are alone, you can do it in front of a mirror. The object is to move as many body parts as possible in new ways at the same time. The exercise leads you to change habitual body-mind positions by moving in a way that you have never moved before. Find a partner and stand opposite from her. You are going to copy the movements that your partner makes. Your partner begins, for example, by raising her right hand and patting her head, then dropping her hand back to her side. Copy the movement and keep doing it while you wait for your partner to introduce the next movement. For the next movement, your partner might tap her left foot with her left hand. Copy this movement while continuing with the previous one. Next, your partner shimmies her shoulders. Copy this while continuing the two previous movements. Then your partner adds a sound like a chicken noise or the theme from the Twilight Zone. Copy the sound and continue the previous movements. Then she rotates her head around in a big circle and so on. Aim to do at least 5 different movements at once. Make them as unusual and absurd as possible. Then switch roles and lead your partner to make movements even sillier than the ones you just finished making. Change partners and do it all again. This exercise always raises the level of laughter and fun dramatically. It shakes up old patterns, liberates lots of energy, and wakes up the possibility of making new connections. Connessione, a recognition of and appreciation for the interconnectedness of all things and phenomena. Systems thinking. Like a poem, the whole of which is greater than the sum of its parts, the following Da Vincian to-do list evokes the spirit of curiosità and connessione. Show how clouds form and dissolve. How water vapor rises from the earth to the air. How mists form and air thickens, and why one wave seems more blue than another. Describe the aerial regions and the causes of snow and hail, how water condenses and hardens into ice, and how new figures form in the air, and new leaves on the trees, and icicles on the stones of cold places. When you toss a stone into a still pond, the water ripples out in a series of widening circles. Conjure up that image in your mind's eye. Ask yourself how one ripple affects another, and where the energy of the ripples goes, and you will be thinking like the maestro. The ever-expanding circle is a lovely metaphor for the principle of connessione, which is evident in Leonardo's frequent observations of patterns and connections in the world around him. The stone, where it strikes the surface of the water, causes circles around it which spread out until they are lost. And in the same manner, the air, struck by a voice or a noise, also has a circular motion, so he who is most distant cannot hear it. Observe how the movements of the surface of the water resemble that of hair, which has two movements, one of which stems from the weight of the hair, and the other from the waves and the curls. In the same way, the water has its turbulent curls, a part of which follows the force of the main current, and another obeys the movement of the incidence of reflection. Swimming in water teaches men how birds fly upon the air. Swimming illustrates the method of flying and shows that the largest weight finds most resistance in the air. Mountains are made by the currents of rivers. Mountains are destroyed by the currents of rivers. Every part is disposed to unite with the whole, that it may thereby escape from its own incompleteness. Many of us have come across some variation of the following rhetorical gambit designed to inspire readers to think in connessione terms. If a butterfly flaps its wings in Tokyo, does it affect the weather in New York? Contemporary systems theorists are fond of answering this classic question with an enthusiastic yes. 5 centuries ago, Leonardo, the original systems thinker, noted, "The earth is moved from its position by the weight of a tiny bird resting upon it." Leonardo frequently noted these extraordinary observations in the margins of his notebooks. Over the years, a number of scholars have criticized Leonardo for the disorder of his notebooks. He never provided a table of contents, an outline, or an index. He scrawled notes in apparently random fashion, switched from topic to topic, and repeated himself frequently. But the maestro's defenders point out that Leonardo's sense of connectedness was so all-embracing that his observations are equally valid, however they are related to one another. In other words, he didn't need to organize them by category or create an outline, because he saw how everything connected to everything else. One secret of Leonardo's unparalleled creativity is his lifelong practice of combining and connecting disparate elements to form new patterns. Vasari records an incident from Leonardo's childhood when he was asked to paint a peasant's shield. Eager to devise an image that would terrify anyone who encountered it, young Leonardo gathered and collected in his room an assortment of crawling reptiles, green lizards, crickets, snakes, butterflies, locusts, bats, and other strange species of this kind. And by adapting various parts of this multitude, he created a most horrible and frightening monster with poisonous breath that set the air on fire. Vasari adds that when Leonardo unveiled this creation to his father, who had commissioned it, Ser Piero was sufficiently shaken and amazed at Leonardo's miraculous talent to give a different shield to the grateful peasant so he could sell his son's work for 100 ducats to a Florentine merchant, who subsequently sold it to the Duke of Milan for 300 ducats. Many years later, Leonardo wrote a brief guide called How to Make an Imaginary Animal Appear Real. He advised, "If therefore you wish to make one of your imagined animals appear natural, let us suppose it to be a dragon, take for its head that of a mastiff or setter, for its eyes those of a cat, for its ears those of a porcupine, for its nose that of a greyhound, with the eyebrows of a lion, the temples of an old cock, and the neck of a water tortoise." When he was living in the Belvedere at the Vatican, Leonardo once took a live lizard and crafted a horn, beard, and wings for it. He kept it in a special box and, according to Vasari, showed it to his friends to make them flee in fear. Leonardo's dragons are a wonderful metaphor for his creative recipe of combination and connection. He studied the essence of beauty in thousands of human faces, and then combined the different elements he observed to create perfect visages in his painting. His insights into acoustics sprang from connections he made to his observations of water, On one page of his notebook, Leonardo compares the rate and direction of travel of rays of light, the force of percussion, the voice of an echo, the lines of a magnet, and the movement of odor. Many of his inventions and designs arose from the playful imaginary combinations he made of different natural forms. Although the seriousness and intensity that Leonardo brought to his studies cannot be overemphasized, he was, as his love of jokes, riddles, and box dragons demonstrates, extremely playful. As Freud commented, indeed, the great Leonardo remained like a child for the whole of his life. Even as an adult, he continued to play, and that was another reason he often appeared uncanny and incomprehensible to his contemporaries. Leonardo's seriousness drove him to penetrate the essence of things, and his playfulness allowed him to make unprecedented original connections. For Leonardo, Connessioni began with his love of nature and intensified through his investigation of human and animal anatomy. His studies of comparative anatomy included dissections of horses, cows, pigs, and many other animals. He noted distinctions and drew connections between the tongue of a woodpecker and the jaw of a crocodile. He related the legs of a frog, the foot of a bear, the eyes of a lion, and the pupils of an owl to those of man. Clearly, his studies went far beyond what was needed to provide a painter with the knowledge required for accurate representation. Leonardo studied the human body as a whole system, a coordinated pattern of interdependent relationships. As he describes it, "I will speak of the functions of each part in every direction, putting before your eyes a description of the whole form and substance of man." Leonardo referred to his studies of anatomy as a cosmografica del minor mondo, a cosmography of the microcosm. His appreciation for the natural proportions of the body were reflected in his architectural and city planning studies. His understanding of the body formed the metaphor for his insights into the earth as a living system. He wrote, "Man was called the microcosmos by the ancients, and surely the term was well chosen. For just as man is composed of earth, water, air, and fire, so is the body of the earth. As man has bones as support and framework for flesh, so the earth has rocks as support for the soil. As man carries a lake of blood in which the lungs inflate and deflate in respiration, so the body of the earth has the ocean which waxes and wanes every 6 hours in a cosmic respiration. As the veins emanate from the lake of blood and are ramified throughout the human body, in the same way the ocean fills the body of the earth with an infinity of veins of water." Foreshadowing by 500 years, physicist David Bohm's theory of the holographic universe, which posits that the genetic code of the universe is held in every atom just as a strand of DNA holds the entire genetic code of an individual. Leonardo wrote, "Every body placed in the luminous air spreads out in circles and fills the surrounding space with infinite likenesses of itself and appears all in all and all in every part." He added, "This is the real miracle, that all shapes, all colors, all images of every part of the universe are concentrated in a single point." Bohm's thesis includes the concept of an implicate order, a deep structure of connectedness that links the universe together. In 1980, Bohm wrote, "Everything is enfolded into everything." 5 centuries earlier, Leonardo had noted, "Everything comes from everything, and everything is made out of everything, and everything returns into everything." Armed with vision, logic, imagination, and an unrelenting desire to know truth and beauty, Leonardo probed the infinite subtleties of nature. Yet the more Leonardo learned as a disciple of experience, the deeper the mysteries became, until he finally concluded that nature is full of infinite causes that experience has never demonstrated. "Where science reached its limits, art took the lead," explains Bramley, writing that Leonardo was so overwhelmed and dumbfounded by the mysteries he could contemplate but not penetrate, that he set aside his scalpel, compass, and pen, and he took up his paintbrush once more. And so we must turn to the maestro's paintings and drawings for his supreme expressions of connessione. The astute eye will see connections that span his body of work. His insight into a universal pattern or implicate order, for example, can be detected in details of works as diverse as Verrocchio's Baptism, in the hairs on the angel's head, the Virgin and Child with St. Anne, in the grouping of figures, the Mona Lisa in the landscape, and his depictions of the deluge in the torrents of water. Many scholars have drawn countless links between Leonardo's natural philosophy and his art, but it is best to discover them for yourself. Let this thought from Plato inspire you. For he who would proceed aright should begin in youth to visit beautiful forms. Out of that he should create fair thoughts, and soon he will of himself perceive that the beauty of one form is akin to the beauty of another, and that beauty in every form is one and the same. Leonardo and Eastern Philosophy. Despite speculation by a few scholars that Leonardo may have ventured to the East, there is no concrete historical evidence of such a journey. Nevertheless, the maestro articulated concepts that are at the core of much Asian wisdom. Bramley compares some of his writings to Zen koans. Mona Lisa is his supreme statement of the principle of yin and yang. He was the first Western painter to make a landscape the central focus of a work of art, something that was done regularly in the East. Leonardo's vegetarianism and advocacy of non-attachment to material things are reminiscent of Hinduism and were extremely unusual in Cinquecento, Florence, or Milan. He also expressed, in Western terms, echoes of the Buddhist doctrine of the void. Nothingness has no center, and its boundaries are nothingness. He added, "Among the great things which are found among us, the existence of nothing is the greatest. Its essence dwells, as regards time, between the past and the future, and possesses nothing of the present. This nothingness has the part equal to the whole, and the whole to the part, the divisible to the indivisible, and it comes to the same amount whether we divide it, or multiply it, or add to it, or subtract from it." Conessione and you. As someone who has read this far in this book, the chances are pretty good that, like Leonardo, you are a seeker of connections. Physically, we seek health. The word health comes from the Old English root hail, meaning whole, affection, and the ecstasy of sexual union. Emotionally, we yearn for a sense of belonging, intimacy, and love. Intellectually, we look for patterns and relationships, seeking to understand systems. And spiritually, we pray for oneness with the divine. This chapter aims to give you practical tools for weaving an ever more beautiful tapestry of connessione in your world. But first, contemplate this self-assessment. Connessione, self-assessment. I am ecologically aware. I enjoy similes, analogies, and metaphor. I frequently make connections that other people don't see. When I travel, I am struck more by people's similarities than their differences. I seek a holistic approach to diet, health, and healing. I have a well-developed sense of proportion. I can articulate the system's dynamics, the patterns, connections, and networks in my family and workplace. My life goals and priorities are formulated clearly and integrated with my values and sense of purpose. I sometimes experience a sense of connectedness with all creation. To Leonardo, a landscape like a human being was part of a vast machine to be understood part by part and, if possible, in the whole. Rocks were not simply decorative silhouettes. They were part of the earth's bones with an anatomy of their own, caused by some remote seismic upheaval. Clouds were not random curls of the brush, drawn by some celestial artist, but were the congregation of tiny drops formed from the evaporation of the sea and soon would pour back their rain into the rivers. Connessione, application and exercises. Contemplate wholeness. What does wholeness mean to you? Experiment with expressing your concept of wholeness in a drawing, gesture, or dance. Do you experience wholeness in daily life? How about disconnection? Describe the difference. What are the different parts or elements that make up your character? Do you experience conflicts between the different parts of yourself? In other words, do your mind, emotions, and body ever disagree? If so, which part tends to dominate? Describe some of the dynamics of your head, heart, and body, then try diagramming them. Do a stream of consciousness writing session on Leonardo's observation that every part is disposed to unite with the whole, that it may thereby escape.